Hi, welcome to The Procrastination Cure. This is your host, Philip J. Eby. The material that you're about to hear is taken from a series of live teleseminar workshop recordings. Now, the good news is that means you'll get to hear the interaction between the participants and myself as we go through the course. The bad news is that not all of the recording is of perfect quality. In particular, about the first 15 minutes of this lesson, you'll hear some strange noises in the background and some clicks and pops. Unfortunately, there isn't a whole lot that we can do about that, so just bear with us for a few minutes and most of that will go away for the remainder of the recording. Lesson 1. Understanding Motivation. Please turn to the Lesson 1 tab in your workbook and turn to page 2 before we begin.
I recently read an article from the University of Calgary that mentioned that something like 1 out of every 5 people suffers from persistent and problematic procrastination, what I'm going to call in this course chronic procrastination. So that's a lot of people, and that's a lot of procrastination. If you think about it, something like that can only happen if procrastination is actually a fundamental part of how the brain works, or at least a fundamental consequence of how the brain works. So in this first lesson, we're going to be looking at how procrastination arises, along with how you motivate yourself to do things, and what you can do about that. And also, if I could ask you all to please mute your phones when you're not speaking so that we don't have the echo and feedback on the line that we're having right now. It's better to use your own phone's mute button if you have one than to use the conferencing system codes because then you'll have an easier time of unmuting yourself. But either way, please go ahead and mute. Okay. So let's get started. Turn to page 2 of your handout. It's titled The Ambition Trap. Okay. Now, we plan, I'd like you to go ahead and fill this in as we go here. We plan based on long-term ideals, but act based on short-term feelings. We plan based on long-term ideals, but act based on short-term feelings. Now, as some of you may know, in the Bible there's a passage by Paul that goes to the effect of, "The good I would, I do not, but the evil I would not, I do." One of the earliest, to my knowledge, descriptions of this phenomenon where, you know, we intend to do one thing, we plan one thing, but we actually do something else. This is also, it's an excellent description of procrastination, a whole number of other things. But the funny thing is the more important the goal, and you can go ahead and fill that in below, the more important the goal, the more likely we are to put off starting. The more likely we are to put off starting. And here's an example of how that comes about. Let's say that you're planning to save for your retirement, and you know that a very small difference in interest rate is going to make a big difference to how much money you end up having when you retire. So it becomes really important to get a good interest rate. And the bank that you usually go to has an interest rate of, let's say, 3%. And the bank across town that you're going to have to drive to and open an account and whatnot has an interest rate of 3.5%, let's say. Now, depending on how difficult it is to get to that other bank and how different of an interest rate it has, you are more likely to end up not putting away any money for retirement at all because you'll say, oh, I should really go to the one with the 3.5 or 3.2 or whatever percent interest rate because that's a much better interest rate. but it's also much more likely that you'll never actually get around to that, to it in that case. Whereas if you just went to the 3% interest at the bank that you already use, you would at least be saving something. So the paradox of this is how does it come about that the things that are actually the most important to us are often the things that we procrastinate the most? That's not always the case. I mean, we can have things that we procrastinate about that aren't particularly important. But this example helps to illustrate the split in our thinking that creates procrastination in almost any circumstance. So since we plan based on long-term ideals, we look at a situation like the interest rate and think to ourselves, oh, well, that's what we should definitely do. That's the thing that makes the most sense to do. It's the best thing from my ideas perspective. But what our brain will actually let us do in reality is determined on short-term feelings like, well, I don't really have time to go to the bank right now. So the separation between these two systems, the part of your brain that thinks and plans to do things, and the part that's actually responsible for getting up off your butt and doing something, are two different parts. They are not physically connected in the brain. They are not really all that much mentally connected in the brain. So we basically have this problem. We have this division of ourselves. So if you turn to page 3, we'll now explore this in a little bit more detail. The way that the action part of the brain works is that it weighs relative feelings. It weighs good feelings and it weighs bad feelings and compares to see how they end up. So underneath the arms of the scale towards the bottom of the page, there's a couple of blank spaces there. Go ahead and write good feelings and bad feelings in those spaces below the scale. Doesn't matter which side you use for what, whatever makes sense to you. And up at the top, there are three spaces. In the center space, write the word future. And at the far end of the arms, both sides, write present. So the way that our brain weighs these feelings is like a scale, where things close to the center of the scale are things that are in the future, and things far out towards the end of the scale are things that are in the present. Now, scientists refer to this as discounted utility theory of procrastination, which in plain English means that you have a scale and you weigh feelings based on how far away things are. If something is very far in the future, it has very little impact on your behavior. If something that's good that's going to happen way off in the future, your brain doesn't really care because it's uncertain. It doesn't matter whether the thing is good or whether it's bad. It's uncertain. Your brain ignores it. Anything that is very close to the present, however, your brain gives a lot of weight to. And so if it's something that's happening right now, if you have to actually get up and do something right now, your brain is only going to be motivated by feelings that have to do with something that's happening right now, like you want to eat, the house is on fire, anything that is specifically relevant. But the key isn't necessarily that you have to have a perfectly strong feeling on either side of the scale. You could just get up to stretch. If you had good feelings about stretching and not very many bad feelings about getting up and stretching, or no bad feelings about it at all. The same thing is true in reverse. If you have a bad feeling about continuing to sit because you're getting uncomfortable and you need to stretch, then that's sufficient to overcome any good feeling you might have about continuing to sit. By the way, somebody's line is still echoing here.
Okay, maybe me.
Yeah, I think it is.
Because I pressed my mute button on my phone.
Uh-huh.
And it still doesn't appear to be working.
Okay. We'll try the star 6.
Okay, let me do the other one then. What is it?
It's star 6.
Star 6.
And it's pound 6 to get it back.
Okay, sorry about that.
Okay. So the key here is the balance between the feelings. What feeling outweighs the other feeling? And how much one feeling outweighs the other depends on whether on how near or far away it is in terms of time. Things that are happening sooner will have more impact. Things that are happening later will have less impact. And what this basically means is that procrastination is not really one thing. Okay, people talk about procrastination like the word procrastination actually means something. But the truth is procrastination is just a label that we stick on top of it whenever we do something that we don't think we should be doing. We're basically labeling the situation that's on page 2, where we plan based on a long-term ideal but act based on short-term feelings. Whenever we notice that there's a difference between those two things, we call it procrastination. But that doesn't mean that procrastination itself is something that you do. Fortunately for us, that means that it's something that's curable, for the most part. Chronic procrastination is definitely curable, but later on we'll look at some types of procrastination that actually are quite useful that you wouldn't want to get rid of. But these only account for a very, very small percentage of procrastination, and none of it is chronic. So because procrastination isn't one thing, it means that there are many different ways that you can be caused to procrastinate. You could procrastinate by simply not having any good feelings and having even the smallest amount of bad feelings about something. You could have lots of good feelings and lots of bad feelings about something, but the bad feelings are near. In fact, if you turn to page 4, and we can go ahead and fill in these blanks now as intensity of feelings equals weight, and time of feelings equals leverage. So, as you can see here, when the feelings are equal, but one of them is nearer to the edge, meaning nearer to the present, it outweighs something that's taking place a long time from now. The inconvenience of going across town outweighs the future imagined benefit of having more money, slightly more money at retirement, or even a lot more money at retirement, because if it's far away enough for you, then you'll have almost no feeling about it at all. So this is why also, by the way, if you've ever been a salesperson or you've been around salespeople who work on commission, you'll find that they have a very interesting culture in which they create all kinds of excitement about things related to selling. They continually have monthly sales contests with different things. They ring bells when they make progress towards a sale or actually make a sale of some kind, depending on what it is. They find all kinds of ways to celebrate individual steps in the process of doing their work. And this is really important for them because salespeople have to deal with rejection, fear of criticism, and all of these other types of bad feelings on a regular basis. And so it's absolutely critical that they have lots of short-term motivators that help them tip the scales in the direction of putting more intensity on the good feeling side and having sooner good feelings about things in order to outweigh the very soon and close to the present feelings of, uh-oh, what if this person slams the door in my face or hangs up on me or whatever. So as we go through here, we'll be talking about various ways that you can tip the scales in your favor, but without needing to actually, you know, have contests or anything like that. Also, the other thing about that is, by the way, you can't really affect chronic. If you try to affect chronic procrastination in this way by having little short-term motivators like contests and, you know, or prizes and other types of celebration, is that in a chronic procrastination situation, you have a feeling that is continually keeping you from making progress. And so what that means is you would have to continually run those outside motivators to keep yourself excited. And that's just basically more work. what we really want to do for dealing with chronic procrastination is take the weight off the bad feeling side of the scale. Take the habitual feelings that are keeping you from acting and just take it off the scale altogether so that even a relatively small amount of good feelings about something will get you moving forward. Okay, let's look at page 5. 4 ways to try motivating yourself and one that actually works. And there are 4 ways that people, generally speaking, try to motivate themselves. Well, I guess 5 if you count the way that actually works. There are 4 ways that people use that don't particularly work. And as we go through here, you can see whether any of these are things that you find yourself using from time to time. So number 1 is imagine disaster. Imagine disaster. And the way that people motivate themselves by imagining disasters is that they think about all the bad things that are going to happen if they don't do the thing that they should do. So they imagine, they take a small event like getting up out of bed in the morning, and they start thinking about how their boss is going to yell at them if they're late, and then they might, lose their job and be broke and starve and be, standing out by the side of the road with a work for food sign until they get to something that's motivating enough in terms of how bad their current situation feels that they're motivated to change it. And actually, all of these motivational methods work, by the way. They just have negative consequences. For example, the downside to imagining disaster is that your life will quickly become a series of real or imagined disasters. The person who gets up out of bed every morning by thinking about being fired gets to have the worry and stress of that every morning. So imagining disaster, like just about everything else, works for a certain class of things, but it's really detrimental to your mental and physical health. Oh, and it also won't help to motivate you to do things that are good for yourself. You're not really going to be able to find a disaster that's going to happen if you don't, say, take some time to rest. So that's going to be another way in which this particular motivational technique will make your life a living hell. The second thing that people do is they imagine doing things. They imagine doing things. And basically, this they think about the thing that they want to do and see how they feel about that. And that produces a result in which you're motivated only to do things that you actually enjoy, or at least things that you don't dislike. This is basically useless for motivating yourself to do anything that you don't actually like. And it also has a tendency to drive an impulsive behavior in some people. In other words, that they'll do things that are fun and forget to work because, it's a lot easier to get good feelings about thinking about doing something fun. And not everything in life is fun. So this also leads to a lack of fulfillment in life because a lot of the things that are most fulfilling in life are difficult or challenging to do. So this doesn't really work very well either. But at least it is a more positive mental environment for the most part to be in than someone who's imagining disaster. If you imagine doing things, then at least you're going to have some fun times in your life. You're just not going to make very much progress towards anything that's particularly fulfilling or important for you. So now we come to motivation strategy number 3, which I call the drill sergeant. And this approach is that basically you bark orders at yourself, you beat yourself up for not doing things. You just in general go, you should be doing this, you should be doing that, you should be doing the other thing. Oh, you didn't do this. And so it's basic. So it's a very verbal mental strategy, in effect. And the main downside to this is that it's both a cause and an effect of poor self-esteem. If you can bark at yourself like that, you don't really have a very high opinion of yourself. You're not likely to treat yourself very well. But also as a side effect, by treating yourself like that, you don't feel like obeying your drill sergeant self, and you will tend to rebel against that and not want to actually do anything that you've just been yelled at to do. This then leads to the kind of procrastination where you do stuff that you don't really enjoy that much, but it's an excuse not to do the thing that you've just yelled at yourself to do. So this also sucks. This one used to be like my major. I've had my share of all of these, but this one has been my particular downfall in the past until I figured out how to get rid of it. Number four, I call it big picture-itis. And this is a strategy where you see everything that is wrong with how things are and or everything that needs to be done about a situation all at once. This one is a particular problem for very intelligent people who are often very good at seeing the big picture. The problem is that when you picture the big picture in the context of trying to get feelings that will motivate you to act, what this mainly does is produce feelings of being overwhelmed, discouraged, and paralyzed, because there's just too much to do and you don't really see where to do it and you can't figure out where to begin. You know, it's just too much. So this one, you can probably tell, another big favorite of mine. So who here has done one or more of these, or has these as your major problem with procrastination?
This is Rene. Okay, I sure recognize numbers 3 and 4, the drill sergeant and big picture-itis. It's very recognizable. Yeah.
Yes. Perfect. Number 4 for me, this is Clyde.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, number 2 and number 4 for me. This is Steve.
Yeah, I'll second that, number 2 and number 4.
I'll go for all 4 of them.
It's quite a list. I don't know. Does anybody have any thing that they do to motivate themselves that doesn't fall into one of these 4 categories?
You get married and count on your spouse motivating you.
Drill sergeant.
Huh?
Oh, that's true. That's an outsourced drill sergeant. That's an interesting one. I hadn't thought of that one.
There's a variation on American disaster where you need to do something to avoid disaster, but you're afraid you won't do it right, so you don't do it at all.
Wait, I didn't catch all of that.
I'm sorry. Imagine number 1. Imagine disaster. There's a side effect that you didn't mention. You can use the imagine disaster. You can imagine a disaster if you don't do something, and then worry about doing it right and end up not doing it.
That's true. That's true. And perfectionism, especially in the context of of your future ambitions, like I was talking about with the interest rate example, if you put off doing something imperfect because you can imagine how you'll do it in the future, or that you can imagine a more perfect way of doing it, but it's more difficult to do, then you basically unbalance yourself. But I wouldn't really call that a motivational strategy as such. That's sort of another way in which that particular motivational strategy can go bad. Although to a certain extent, it applies to a lot of others as well, especially big picture. I would associate it more generally as something that would show up with big picture-itis, where part of being able to see the big picture is sort of seeing the way it should be in all its perfection, so to speak, but having no idea how to get there. Okay, so let's move on to the thing that actually works. I'm going to repeat this a couple of times so you can write the whole thing down, because it's a strategy here. Okay, so the one thing that actually works is you experience attraction to a local motivating outcome. That's experience attraction to a local motivating outcome. So when you experience attraction to a local motivating outcome, each of those words actually has a specific meaning, and we'll be going into that a lot more in this lesson four of the procrastination cure. You need to experience attraction because you need to have an experience of feelings. You need to experience attraction because it's a positive feeling. You need it to be a local motivating outcome because you need it not to be global, like the paralyzing big picture. You need it to be motivating, not a disaster. And you need it to be an outcome, not a process or an ideal. For right now, I'm just going to leave you with that definition, and we're going to come back to that later on and get into step-by-step exactly how to do that. But for now, I just want you to be aware that there is a specific strategy that you can use to motivate yourself. It is a common motivational strategy when people actually are succeeding at things. And in fact, even people who chronically procrastinate will use this motivational strategy in some parts of their lives.
Hi, this is Philip Eby again. Thanks for listening to this excerpt from The Procrastination Cure. As you've just heard, there are four ways to motivate yourself that don't work, and one that does. Of course, there's a whole lot more to eliminating procrastination and living your dreams than just knowing the right way to motivate yourself. That's why I've put together an entire program called 7 Days to Live Your Dreams. 7 Days to Live Your Dreams is a series of 7 lessons on acceptance, creativity, decision-making, motivation, action, organization, and balance. And as you listen to these workshops one by one, you're going to find that all sorts of things in your life start changing. Many people have changed careers, started their own businesses, got into new relationships, moved into new houses, or moved across the country. And what you'll do with this is up to you. But nothing's going to happen until you take action. Seriously, how much longer are you going to wait before you start living the life that you were meant to have? Money is replaceable. Your life isn't. You only get one life. You only get one chance to live up to your potential. Don't throw it away. Get The Procrastination Cure, 7 Days to Live Your Dreams, and a full membership in the Owner's Circle, and start living your dreams today. Not tomorrow, not next week, today, right now. Get out your credit card, go to theownerscircle.com/batteries, BATTERIES, right now, and sign up. Thanks for listening.